operate as successfully until I decided to leave. When I finally traced down the reason for the operation, they were forced to the wall and corrected it the morning I came in for my report presentation. The plant operated fine from then on. But it took a solid year's work to trace it down. Mm. And I said, I couldn't, there was nothing I could do about it. And so I said, well, I'm getting out of here.
Were how many Germans were left in the, were they running the plant?
The plant manager was a German. The technical head was the plant manager was, I think, was not even an American citizen. The technical head was a German, American citizen, American wife. I never could be sure that the technical head knew, was party to the, it was a manager of the plant who ordered the correction the morning I brought the charts in. I'd worked all night and finally got, designed a whole new system of measuring surface tension of viscose and spin bath until I could trace down where it was coming from, and finally said, well, that had to be it. And I made the report, and, you know, it was the rigid Germanic atmosphere. I couldn't get back into the section where they were adding the wetting agent, the surface tension agent. They simply were withholding it, and so everything would keep breaking down.
And people in New York were not even concerned about it.
No. That's just...
I can back up from it. I'm still curious as to how you got from trying to enlist in the Navy to North American radon.
As a matter of fact, all I know is that I received a very official-looking document asking me to appear to interview, this was the president in New York, the financial type. So I have no idea how it went from the Navy to the alien property custodian to this sort. The rubber, synthetic rubber connection, undoubtedly, through the recesses of government, just shuttled it that way. And I got a song and dance about how I had no business going into the Navy and should apply my talents here and so, that sort of thing.
You see. Okay. The Navy had all of your background in their files.
Right.
Okay. And then you decide to leave North American Rand. Did you have a place to go to at that point? It seemed to me that you had some patents while you were there.
I think most of my patents are U.S. rubber patents.
Okay.
And I have no list of them at all. Over, I don't know, maybe half a dozen or such a matter. Nothing of any great consequence. I don't think anything in North America. Well, it might have been two. That's right. We had a patent attorney. It might be one or two, a few there, but not much. No, and I think it was with a colleague at North American who had been at Celanese previously, who passed word along to somebody at Celanese who invited me up to New York for an interview. And, yes, that was how it worked. I didn't look around for a job. I was ready, and I chatted with this fellow, and he had been with Celanese. And I guess, again, my being of this turn of mind, having no great image of great competency in myself, I said, well, you know, I should be all right at Sony's. They're so lousy, I ought to do well there.
And what was your first position at Celanese then? That was, I think, 46.
Yes, I went to, I was assigned, I was hired in New York office, oddly enough, by an assistant to the technical director. and sent to Cumberland, Maryland, the oldest of their plants, put in the spinning pilot plant for 6 months, and then was made manager of the pilot plant, and did quite interesting work, you know, typical kind of thing. Although I get credit for inventing pigmented yarn, new filtration systems, you name it, all the typical routine industrial type of thing that goes on, and at that level I was pretty competent at that kind of thing. So then very rapidly I went from there to, oh yes, we yes, we business, I would say, what, 40? Well, I think right after the war, there was a business shock for acetate particularly, I think. And then, or really what had happened was that during the war, the product was so short that the plant got away with anything, you see. Quality was unbelievably bad. Indeed, the bribery, I'm sure, was rife between purchasers and the supplier and so on, you know, price controls and all the evils that go with that kind of a situation. The moment that the economy settled down, the purchasers wanted no part of it, and so the plant just collapsed. That was soon after I arrived. Well, with a year or so after, and by that time I knew enough to know that should run the plant, and in the course of a few months got them started and rolling again. But then they put me in, said, well, we've got to have quality control. And so I went to their newer plant and as their superintendent of quality control, briefly there in Narrows, Virginia. And then they decided, well, we better have a director of quality control for the whole corporation. And that sent me to New York as director of quality control.
That was around 51?
That should have been, let's see. Yeah, that's about right. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you got that year, but that's about right. Must be. That's about right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when you went back to New York then.
Yeah.
The New York office. What does a director of quality control do?
Well, he did whatever we'd never had one before. So, well, I put a superintendent of quality control in every plant, in the textile division and in the major plants of the chemical division. And by this time, I was learning a little bit about how to deal with people and the need to build a power structure. I think today it's called networking, isn't it?
Something like that.
And so you could, after much harassment, the plant managers would give way and let me have a voice in what they could ship and couldn't ship and so on. And so we did a good job for several years there until a new way of life evolved, and then you didn't need it anymore. And I went over as associate director of research at some of these laboratories in Summit.
Who was responsible for that change? Did you indicate that the director of quality control was no longer needed now that everything was?
No, it wasn't that simple. My assistant was made director, and it. It sort of lingered on for a few years, but I was, I think George Snyder, who was then an Englishman who had been technical head of the company since its inception, since along with Dr. Camille Dreyfus, and he wanted me over at the Central Research Laboratories and put me over there as associate director briefly, and simultaneously the company separated the textile division out as a different operating division. So very quickly I moved out of Summit to Charlotte as technical director of the textile division. And
yes, that would be 53, I think.
Yeah. That sounds right.
And what were your responsibilities there?
Well, it was having separated the division, it was, of course, continuing then quality control for the division, plant development. We put a superintendent of development in each plant, reporting for technical guidance to me, you see. And so I had my power structure again for quality control and development. The technical end of plant operations was my function, and started up a pilot plant operation. And a I started to clear out the basement of the big new office building, dug it out, and put applications and product development, a whole textile operation down there to develop the marketing effort, to give a more technical base to the whole marketing effort of the company, of the textile division. And this was in Charlotte, all in Charlotte, North Carolina. On the whole, this was all about pretty satisfying and rewarding in terms of a sense of accomplishment and making up for a profitable division, smooth working operation. But that lasted, about 3 years, I think, and then...
53 to 56.
56, yeah, and then... it was while I was down there that I got involved with got involved with Luther Hodges, who was governor of North Carolina then. And he approached me through Romeo Guest, his ideas about trying to get more technical oriented activities in the state. They had pretty good college, at Duke University and Chapel Hill, and all their graduates were getting jobs out of state. And so I spent a lot of time with him on this project, the Research Triangle project, at that time. we were really, before we got it started, the planning generally, we got pretty well planned, planning was pretty well finished. Then I was moved to New York as a corporate technical vice president.
How many years was this project in the Research Triangle? Were you involved with that?
I'm still a lifetime governor. I've never been off of it there. I get over it.
Who else was involved with that?
Well, George Simpson, who is now or still, I'm sure, still is head of education at the state level in Georgia, of the state of Georgia, was the real intellect. He was then a young instructor or assistant professor of sociology at Chapel Hill, I think, and Luther Hodges got him released from university for a year to work on this, and it was his intellectual child, really, and he went on subsequently to the head of the state of Georgia's educational system. Now, what was your question? Let's see.
We're looking at
who else was involved there.
If you really worked on it.
Well, I think it's some important significance that my impression, certainly at the time, was of a group of people in that Durham, Chapel Hill area, Duke Medical and people and so on, who were enormously attractive, eager people, ambitious and perfectly delightful situation that existed there at that time. I say all that because with success, such overwhelming success, one doesn't get that flavor anymore. But it was everything about the community. It didn't have the southern drawbacks at all. It was an enormously eager, open-minded society there, and that's why it was successful. It was just the right time and the right people and the right place and everything that made it work. So I mentioned names, of course, Watts Hill, George Watt. Isn't it George? No, Watts, W-A-T-T-S, Hill. Was the financial father of the thing. Oh, well, along with many big financed people, of course, of that area, that Luther Hodges got into the thing. So I'm talking about only the science, the technical side of it. It was a big business side of accumulating several thousand acres of land to parcel out and manage, but the Research Triangle Institute became the part that where my focus was.
Were you doing this as an individual, or was the company also?
No, it was as an individual. Okay. The company never got really involved, except later on. After I was in New York, and the Institute, the whole program was going pretty slowly. And it's a little hard to go back and analyze all of the motivations involved, but I did feel that. At the time, I didn't express it this way. My feeling, my intellectual justification for this, for the course I took, was that the South had been good to the Solanaes Corporation. They had plants Cumberland, Maryland, Narrows, Virginia, Rock Hill, South Carolina. This was there. This was the whole financial base of the corporation. They had, 10,000, 15,000 employees in the southern area. And so I found myself in New York as technical head and as a member, as a director of the Camille and Henry Dreyfus Foundation. So that it seemed appropriate at the time to me that to persuade the foundation to aid and abet this Research Triangle effort. And the directors agreed, a commitment of $250,000, I believe. No, $2.5 million at that point, for a Dreyfus Research laboratory in the Institute. Well, this gave an enormous boost to the whole undertaking, of course, because somebody had to go first. You understand? And then Chemstrand came in, built their research laboratory there, and the whole ball started rolling. Well. The the reason I'm taking a little time on this is because it was a second effort to build a basic polymer research group.
Okay.
And it didn't work. But the history of it, George Herbert, who's still president of the Research Triangle Institute, prepared a history about a year ago of it, I have a copy of that in here. I'll give it, go in the files. I'll lose it if I.
I can get a copy back.
No, I don't keep the original. I don't need a copy. I just remark that George is saying. Oh, yes, he ended his letter by saying, knowing your reaction to such things, is that where he gives me such great credit, and I do not expect you to be anything but displeased.
Well, that's very good information. And I appreciate that document. That will be very helpful. Then you moved back to New York in
56. Mm-hmm. And stayed on and there.
In 66 you became the senior vice president.
Well, yes, that was a process of I was always fairly uncomfortable with line administrative responsibilities. And so they were good enough then to say, we'll make another vice president, technical director, and you can be senior vice president of research, and you won't have anybody to report to you except your secretary and the vice president, technical director. So they were very good to me. I spent those years, I hate to say, not involved in science or technology, because I really was, in the sense that of knowing the value of what I was looking at, but from a practical standpoint, it was dealing with partners, ICI in England, who I persuaded to join us in a joint Celanese in a joint venture, which became Fiber Industries, and grew in about 7 years. We passed $1 billion sales in that company. And is now, Celanese acquired it last year from ICI, the last of it, with the Japanese in plastics and fibers, Dicel, Japanese company. And we acquired Champlin Petroleum, which I was given responsibility for the brief year or so that we had it. So, before we learned better.
Very fascinating account. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on, that I haven't asked, that you would like to?
Mm. I don't know, really. I think we kind of covered my life history. I have not kept in touch with my colleagues. I don't know why. I guess that both my wife and I are loners. So in the last 25 years I've been helping her with her sculpture. I keep up with reading science primarily, the degree about the only degree I keep up. We both ride horses 4 or 5 days a week. I have keep my horse at the home of a professor of astrophysics at Florida Atlantic University. We're in the process right now of moving back to Vermont, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think with age take a fairly dim view of the world. I thought the two saddest things I've seen this week were the Priestley Medal address and Eric Bloch's analysis of R&D in the United States.
In what way?
The first of all, the Chemical Society. It's not so much the substance of. I guess what I really object to is I never liked the power structure that I refer to. I dislike the old boy network. I think I can distinguish between the men of substance and those who hang on, and unfortunately like in most other aspects of our society, the shortage of resources for science is very much the making of scientists themselves, as in other fields. And I mean, medicine is much worse than science, as medicine has run completely wild, in that these professions must clean their own houses up if a society is to survive and be meaningful. Period. That's enough to put on tape. I will take that out, I trust, in the cleaning up process.
Well, I want to thank you very, very much for taking your time and sharing this with us, and appreciate the information that you gave us. Thank you.